Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY for today's Community Conversations. I'm today's host, Chris Bessler. If you're listening locally, you just may have noticed that our housing prices, both for rentals and real estates, have shot up in the past year, or that traffic is more congested, or that the lines are longer at the grocery store. At least part of that is due to an influx of new arrivals here that are part of a phenomenon affecting rural towns around the West that are situated as gateway towns to natural amenities, that is, towns like Sandpoint. This phenomenon has accelerated with the COVID-19 pandemic, as many people who have jobs that allow them to work remotely are flocking to our rural areas. In fact, there's a new term that's been coined for places like Sandpoint, that we're a so-called Zoom town, that is, a town where workers can use the Zoom app to do their jobs. Today we look at this trend with Danya Rumore, a professor and founder of the Gateway and Natural Amenity Region Initiative, called NAR Initiative for short. Danya tells more about the NAR Initiative, and we discuss how these trends are affecting Sandpoint specifically. Here at the top of the broadcast, I also want to mention that the NAR Initiative has been hosting a series of webinars on these trends. And today, Thursday, November 12th, this airs, the City of Sandpoint Planning Director Aaron Qualls will be part of a panel discussion on the impacts of amenity migration. That webinar is at 1 p.m. today, and it's free to attend, via Zoom, of course. If you're interested, go to the NAR Initiative section of the Utah State University website. That address is www.usu.edu/GNAR. And with that long introduction, let's get on to today's talk with Danya Rumore. We're speaking now with Danya Rumore. She is the assistant professor at the University of Utah and founder of the Gateway and Natural Amenity Region Initiative, or the NAR Initiative. Danya, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
The goal of NAR is to help rural communities that are gateways to significant natural amenities, such as we have here with our mountains and lakes and public lands, deal with the big influx of people who are coming here to visit or live. And we're going to talk about the NAR Initiative in some detail here. But first, Danya, tell us about yourself, because, in fact, you grew up here in Sandpoint and you're a Sandpoint High School graduate.
I am. I actually ran cross country and track for Sandpoint High. And when I left Sandpoint, I was on a mission to basically just make the world better. That is my mission. And it took me through a degree in environmental science where I realized science isn't really the problem. People are the problem. Through multiple degrees and eventually a PhD in environmental policy and planning with a real focus on consensus building and conflict resolution and really the skill set to help people work together to solve complex problems. I now, at the University of Utah, run a program called the Environmental Dispute Resolution Program, and we jokingly call ourselves the Program on Collaboration. And we really try to work as far upstream on conflict as we can in getting people working together to solve complex environmental, natural resource, and public policy problems. And through that work and my knowledge and familiarity with Sandpoint and other places which we've taken to calling Gateway and Natural Amenity Region Initiative or Natural Amenity Communities, I started to realize that places like Sandpoint, places like Springdale outside of Zion National Park, places like Jackson, Wyoming, have a lot in common. And that ultimately is what led to the NAR Initiative. We realized that as these places start to grow and develop, they tend to experience a number of similar pressures, things like acute housing affordability issues, pressures on their natural resources, concerns about losing their small town qualities. And we really wanted to get involved in trying to better understand the challenges these places face and give them tools and resources to protect the things that make them so special.
Okay, well, we're going to dig in on that a bit more, but just a couple more questions. So what years were you at Sandpoint High?
Oh boy, I'll have to do some math now. I graduated in 2003.
Okay. Did you like take off from town and you haven't been back? Do you get to Sandpoint much?
I do. My family still lives in Sandpoint. My parents are there. My grandma's there. I have a brother and sister-in-law and their kids are still there. So I definitely spend probably a cumulative number, like about a month or two in Sandpoint every year.
Oh, good. Okay. You're still really connected. That's And you're getting to see your research play out in real time right here, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I track what's happening in North Idaho, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I actually have come back and done some collaboration work in North Idaho. a place that it's very near and dear to my heart, which again is a big part of why I study these places.
Okay, so let's dig in some more on the NAR initiative. You kind of described the background a bit, but when did it get started, and what are some of the specific things about NAR?
Yeah, really, the NAR initiative idea, I would say, started in probably about 2016. As I mentioned, I was actually doing some collaborative planning work up in North Idaho, trying to get the different regional stakeholders working together on dealing with growth and related pressures. I was also at that time working with the Zion National Park region and trying to help that region work together on visitation related impacts from the park. And just again, trying to help that region stay special, as I might put it, amid the influx of millions of people every year to come visit the park. And through that work, again, had this idea of these places are really similar, even though they're really different. And that actually led to our first line of research, which we conducted mostly in 2018, got funding and got things in place. And then in 2018, did a regional survey of NAR communities throughout the West to basically explore, are they indeed having similar experiences? How are they different? What's going on in these places? And we just finally published those data from that a little while ago in an article that's gained a lot of attention. I think we'll talk about the Zoomtown phenomena. Article came out right as remote workers were really flooding to a lot of these communities. But through that 2018 research, we really got the sense there's a there. There's a lot of communities that have a lot of similar issues, especially once they get discovered, start to grow and develop, become popular places to live and visit. And that planted the seed for the NAR initiative. And it was really just with COVID-19 beginning of this year hitting these communities throughout the West particularly hard, taking to calling it the triple whammy. First, a lot of these places had very high caseloads of COVID, places like Blaine County, Idaho, where Sun Valley is, or a lot of the Colorado ski towns. People brought COVID with their skis into these communities. And we realized, wow, these communities have such transient populations. Who would have thought they were so vulnerable to a pandemic? But it makes sense, right? So they first were some of the first to really have high caseloads of COVID outside of the coastal cities. And then their economies got totally shut down as people were no longer traveling to go to the national park. And their economies tend to be very heavily reliant on tourism and service industries. So there was the second impact of the economic hit that was particularly hard. And now these places are getting hit hard by amenity migration. People who can still have a job in New York City but live in Whitefish, Montana. And so that's the triple whammy, right? Now their economies are still suffering and they're seeing a massive influx of people, at least many of these places are. So with COVID hitting in March, we kind of saw all of this coming and we realized it was go time. It was time to really get out there and provide tools and resources for these communities. So we officially launched the NAR initiative in early 2020 and just now have sort of taken it fully on the road and been doing public events and things of that sort since early this fall.
Mm-hmm. And I want to mention that people can see a ton of information about the NAR initiative on the Utah State University website. And I'm going to mention this address a couple times for folks, but it's usu.edu/GNAR. And if folks are listening to this and they want to check in on that after they hear this, go there because there's a ton of information that more than we'll be able to cover in our talk here right now. So the Zoomtown thing, where remote workers can do their work via Zoom. And in fact, we're conducting this interview via Zoom right now. Zoom is a very big thing in our world, as it turns out. But amenity migration was something that was happening, prior to that. People that were coming to these nice, what are called gateway communities. And when a big influx of people come into a town, it ends up changing a lot of things. So let's talk about some of the issues or problems that are incurred when that occurs. And, the one top of mind thing for us here in Sandpoint is housing. Specifically housing for local workforces. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. So again, this whole idea of a Zoom town is a kind of new phenomenon. It's really been born out of COVID and the fact so many people are working remotely. And as a result of that, are spending a lot of time, maybe permanently moving to places that are disassociated from their work, right? And these places are the Zoom towns. And to your point, Chris, amenity migration is kind of a age-old thing. People have, for many years, decades, and maybe centuries, moved to places that had good amenities, be those natural amenities or something else, if the chance opened up, right? And now the chance is opening up for people who maybe thought they had to stay in San Francisco, but no longer have to stay in San Francisco to keep their jobs. So we've heard from rural development experts that they think COVID-19 and related pressures on remote work or opportunities for remote work has expedited amenity migration to the rural West by about 15 years. So it was already happening. We expected it to continue to happen. And in some ways, COVID has just compressed that movement of people, or at least that's what we think is happening, from saying being spread out over 15 years sort of now. And what's very interesting is this amenity migration has been happening to the West for a long time, and certain places have been experiencing it for decades. I mean, we can think of places like Jackson, Wyoming, or much of Eagle County, Colorado, the Vail area. People have been moving to these places, buying second homes, retiring there for a long time. And now we're just seeing more of that amenity migration in other places that maybe didn't historically have so much of it. But we know from the experience of a lot of these communities that have experienced it for a long time that with the influx of people and growth come a variety of impacts. And based on our research, we started to take into calling those big city impacts in small towns. And like you said, housing affordability is pretty much top of the list. When we did our regional survey and research in 2018, so this is before COVID, we heard from 83% of the survey respondents from these NAR communities that housing affordability was a moderate to acute issue for their community. And these are towns of different sizes, from 500 people to 20,000 people, different kinds of, you know, near national parks or not near national parks. It was a real diversity of communities that were in 2018 experiencing pretty acute issues with their housing. And that's just one of the issues, right? And housing's tied to a lot of other things. One of the things we've seen is as these communities get impacted from growth and visitation, housing gets expensive. Their workers can no longer afford to work there. And these are not just service industry workers. These are teachers. These are firemen. These are sort of our basic service people. And so housing is no longer affordable for those people. Where do they live? Well, they have to move out of town, right? So now they're commuting into town. And so now you have a lot more pressure on your road infrastructure, on your transportation infrastructure. And in a place like Zion National Park region, like Springdale outside of Zion National Park, you basically start to have workers commuting in amid tens of thousands of visitors. It's hard for people to get to work. The road's congested. You start to have lineups of cars. So the impacts can be that, or it can be if you're commuting from Driggs, Idaho to Jackson, Wyoming, that you're going over a snowy pass in the winter. That's a safety issue. You may not be able to get back at the end of the day to your kids back in Driggs because the pass closes. And so having people have to transport in from outside of the community presents its own community impacts. And it also tends to lead to issues of urban sprawl or need for public transportation. So you start to have housing issues, transportation issues we often see, and then just kind of community character issues. We hear often from these communities as they experience significant increases in visitation and or growth that they identify as small towns and they're worried about losing their small townness, or they lose their small townness. Right? We can think of places like Bend, Oregon or Bozeman that over the last few decades have gone from being small towns to being cities, big cities. I just saw that Bend, Oregon, I think is over 100,000 people now. And not that it's not a cool city, but that's a very different thing. And as somebody who grew up in and cares about Sandpoint, it's hard for me to imagine it becoming a Bend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually grew up in Oregon myself, not too far from Bend, and it has changed so dramatically. I can't even recognize it. Can't even figure out how to get through town now, in a way, where it used to be a pretty straightforward thing. So, yeah, that's kind of a scary thing, I think, for a lot of people in Sandpoint. It's like, are we headed down that track? And I don't suppose there are ways to stop that from happening, but what are some of the things? So you rattled off housing as kind of a keystone to the types of other impacts that we can see, such as congestion and, you know, trying to maintain the rural values that attract people here in the first place. It occurs to me that the amenity migrants that we're seeing now, so not a new phenomenon, but it's been accelerated by the whole remote worker Zoom town phenomenon that you mentioned. They're coming here because they're actually working outside of our local economy. And in a lot of cases, they're getting, you know, pay that might be two or three times what that position would pay if they worked here in the local economy. And it's, is it creating, and I don't, the information may be too early because the phenomenon is so recent, but is it bringing a different demographic of people into these small towns, whereas many migrants previously might have been senior citizens who are on the cusp of retirement or second homeowners?
Yeah, I think we don't have all the data right now. I can speak from what we do know and what we've seen. Amenity migrants can be a lot of things, right? I don't want to blanket them into just one type or one age group. I think we have seen people move into Sandpoint who are actually boosting up the local economy, starting little businesses, running their businesses out of Sandpoint. I think we will continue to see that in a lot of these communities. And I also think that everything we're seeing right now indicates that a lot more people are coming into these communities and anticipate being able to work remotely or are working remotely. And to your point, that is a really big challenge for cost of living. Because if you can maintain a job in Silicon Valley and be earning $200,000 plus a year, and you move into an economy like Sandpoint's, where the average housing price is gonna, well, basically where historically the average housing price has pretty much been your annual salary, that's gonna change things. So if your local worker average salary is $40,000, but you have people moving in with $200,000 salaries, the buying power is just totally out of whack. And how that's going to play out in these different communities, we'll see. But I think we're already seeing early signs of that, in that housing prices, I think for the whole state of Montana, and especially in places like the Flathead Valley, we're hearing they're just skyrocketing. And I've heard from my family in North Idaho that it's pretty much impossible for locals to buy houses in Sandpoint right now. Like, there's not much on the market. What's on the market's going fast. It's just totally, like I said, out of whack with the local buying power. So we don't have all the data on it, but we are already seeing early signs of it. And it sort of is one of those predictable consequences. And I think for communities that were already feeling really strained with housing, it's just going to make it that, it's just one more pressure that makes it that much more challenging. And we're actually really trying to encourage the amenity migrants, the people moving into these communities, to appreciate their impact. Because especially if you come into a community and you've got a big salary, you buy a house, and then you're like, ooh, short-term rentals are really lucrative, I'll buy another house. And basically if that just carries on, eventually the whole long-term rental market or workforce housing market in the community you've chosen to move into is gutted. And people, there's not a lot the government, local government, state governments can do to sort of stop that process, but people can be thoughtful and responsible in their impact on a community. And I just think it's important that amenity migrants keep that in mind, or frankly, just anybody who lives in a community where their salary is kind of out of whack with the local community, appreciating you have an impact on that community and you need to invest in that community so you can help it stay special and be the place you wanted to move to in the first place.
Boy, that's a tough message to get across, isn't it? and it, you know, as with any message, it has to be repeated a whole bunch of times before people really pick up on it. So we'll see if we can get the new migrants in town to be more aware of their impact in that respect.
And the people who've been there a long time, right? If you're a retiree and you brought in a lot of wealth. We used to joke that the best way to earn a wealth in Sandpoint was to bring a bigger wealth.
But, you know,
I mean, people do, they come in and they, it's not just new amenity migrants. We have to keep that in mind. There are already a lot of people in Sandpoint or other communities who have sources of wealth that are out of whack with the local earning potential. And in a place like Jackson, Wyoming, this has been playing out for a long time. And income inequality in Jackson, Wyoming is, I think it's like one of the most striking in the whole country. And their housing market's real challenging, right? And that's a big part of it. It's just when you have that kind of income inequality, it creates a very difficult situation. And I should note that in our 2018 research, income inequality was one of the other really highly reported issues across all NAR communities that completed our survey. So again, it was already a problem in 2018, and we are seeing that COVID and remote working is probably going to exacerbate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Jackson, and I think you mentioned Utah, maybe Moab is down there experiencing a similar phenomenon. Are there things that Sandpoint can learn from what these other towns are doing?
That's a great question. And part of what the NAR initiative is really trying to do is help foster peer-to-peer learning and sharing, because we know a lot of communities have been through this before, as other communities are just starting to experience it. Some communities have figured out ways to deal with short-term rentals that work really well, and others don't even realize they need to manage short-term rentals. So one of the things we are trying to do is foster that peer-to-peer sharing and learning. What I can say from our research is that when we ask NAR communities across the West, you know, what community do you want to be like? Who's got it figured out? Nobody's got it figured out. That's what we learned. I'm not surprised. We did hear from a lot of places that they don't want to be Jackson. They don't want to be Moab. Basically, again, they want to maintain their small townness and not lose that. I do think it's important to recognize that even though people will say they don't want their community to be like Jackson or Moab, we all love to go visit Jackson and Moab. Right, they're still great places. I just think that it speaks to the fear of losing that small town identity. And so I think more than anything, these communities can learn certain things from each other. There's no blueprint, there's no place you can look to who's got it all figured out. But I think a community like Sandpoint and the broader region around Sandpoint hopefully can learn from places like Moab, Jackson, I mean, you can then Vail, Aspen, lots of places in Colorado that have been through this before. And what we've heard from a lot of those communities, say like Moab, is they wish they'd started planning and doing the work 20 years earlier. But they had a vision of who they want to be when they grow up and a plan for how to get there and a plan for how to deal with the predictable unintended consequences of growth. You can't close the door behind you. You can't totally stop the growth, but you can plan for it. You can be prepared for it. And that can be anything from having a strategy for how you're going to accommodate more people in a way that doesn't lead to sprawl or eat away at the things that make your community so special. I know for a place like Sandpoint that having the rural identity, the open spaces is really important. If you don't plan to protect those things, they're very easy to lose. Trails, the connectivity, all those things, right? You have to plan for that. And I think what can be challenging in a lot of the rural West is somehow planning has developed a bad name. Planning is a bad word. And I don't fully understand that or know why that is, because planning is really just a tool. It's a way you can figure out who you want to be as a community or a region and then put in place strategies to get there. And so that's really the one thing we know across the board is really helpful for these places is acknowledging this is happening, acknowledging you can't just close the door, acknowledging you can't just not grow. It's that we don't have tools for that as far as I know. But you can manage it and you can have a vision and work towards that vision and harness the growth and the opportunities it brings while managing the challenges it presents. So I do think an important part of this conversation, Chris, is that a lot of these communities, especially prior to COVID and definitely maybe a decade ago, even Sandpoint would be in this bucket, were sort of on this boom bust cycle, right? Of being afraid of drying up and having no jobs for anybody, or potentially being like the next community featured in Sunset Magazine and blowing up. And I think now we're seeing that we're probably pushing towards that blowing up and the growth thing, but there's always been the fear too of being an abandoned small town. And so for a lot of these places, I think the remote worker amenity migrant movement presents a lot of opportunities, because just leaning on tourism and visitation is a very fragile economy. And again, we've seen that in Sandpoint. What do you do during the fringe season? You have to lay off your employees. Just leaning on that's not great, and drying up and not having an economy is not great. And these remote workers and amenity migrants might present real economic opportunities. But again, you want to plan for that and harness it and make sure that it doesn't take control of you, but that you harness it.
And that's where you're trying to get to with an R initiative, is figure out those strategies. So we have another phenomenon that's going on here, and I don't know if it's specific just to Sandpoint, or if you're seeing it in some of these other towns that are they're grappling with this phenomenon, and that's we're seeing a bunch of what are being termed alt-conservative people moving in as part of what's called the readout movement, and some are just coming here to get to a more rural lifestyle, you know. The same thing that's bringing other amenity migrants. But some are moving in with a specific intent to fashion a more conservative local and state politics. So it stands to change both our local politics, but also our local cultures. Do you see that happening in other communities?
So a great question. And I'm familiar with the American Redoubt. I am by no means an expert on the American Redoubt. What I've seen is it's been a big issue up in North Idaho, or it's been a big phenomena. It's actually quite interesting to me at the same day that our research on NAR communities got published in Fast Company in an article on the Zoomtown phenomena. That same day, NPR did a special on North Idaho and on the kind of conservative movement and some of the political tensions resulting from it. And for me, that was just such a kind of wild microcosm, or a wild, like, shining the light on what's happening up in North Idaho. Because I specifically mentioned Sandpoint because I'm from Sandpoint and said, you know, these are the kinds of communities that seem to be experiencing the Zoomtown phenomena, or soon might. And then there's this NPR article on this whole different kind of migration to Northern Idaho. So I'm aware enough of what you're explaining to know that that's playing out in North Idaho. You have these different forces of people moving there. Surprisingly, I really haven't encountered it much in the other communities we've worked with directly, and it hasn't come up as much in our other work. I don't think that's because it's not there. Maybe I just haven't had those conversations. What I do know is that the American Redoubt, at least as of a few years ago, was encouraging people to strategically relocate. I think that's the term they use. But basically to relocate to Northern Idaho, I think it was Western Montana, and then Wyoming. And I think the idea behind that movement is just sort of a wanting to get away from government oversight, or too much government oversight. And I think those areas were identified because they were seen as areas where there's less government direct involvement. I don't know if I'm using the right words. And so I would suspect that other NAR communities, other natural amenity regions in those areas are experiencing some amount of that pressure. That said, Northern Idaho has long been a place where people who want to sort of get away from the government, get away from oversight, have gone. It's not the only place. You know, people, when I say I'm from North Idaho, people either say, oh, I love Sandpoint, or they say, ooh, that area has weird politics. I mean, I don't know where people get these impressions, but I think part of it is because there is this history of interesting movements to North Idaho. But that also is true, I think, of areas like Indiana or Michigan, right, where it's just there's certain areas people have targeted to get away from government oversight. And again, just like, I think what's so fascinating right now is that movement of people is really colliding with potentially a movement of employees from Google and Amazon wanting to live in a beautiful natural amenity place. And
with a whole different type of politics, or, you know, cultural expectations. Yeah.
Right. And then of course there's the people like me, who my family migrated there a number of decades ago. And then there are lots of other families who have had long family history there. And the reality is all those people have a right to be there, at least how we've set up this country and how we operate. And we're going to have to figure out how to kind of coexist and work together. And as a collaboration professional, I think it's really possible. It's doable. But I do think if we're not working together and cooperating, those tensions could kind of squash the region. And the reasons most of us are moving there, or have moved there, or have chosen to stay there, those things might get lost in our inability to work together and to have a vision together. And like I said, pursue that vision through the tools we have, planning and otherwise.
Yes, it's going to be very interesting to see how things play out. And in fact, there is a group in Sandpoint that's, you know, that's wondering, how do we retain kind of the culture that we know from living here 20 or 30 or 40 years, because we're seeing the culture change as a result of these sorts of impacts, not just from people that are real conservative, but from people that bring a different set of values from coming from other areas. You know, and that's part of, I'm sure, what NAR is about as well. It's right. Just maintaining rural cultures that the people that live there like, and they don't necessarily want to see change just because a bunch of new people are moving in. So tell us what kinds of resources are available to communities via the NAR initiative?
That is a great question. We are very much a up and coming organization, so we're trying to figure out what the need is and be responsive to it. Our real three buckets of work are research, again, is trying to understand what's going on and empirically document it. We're based at university. We see that as quite important. And then education, and that's both education in the form of getting students out in these communities, providing support, training up students at the university to be more prepared to work in these communities, but also training for these communities and getting them the sort of skills and tools they need to protect the things that make them so special. And then our real emphasis is broadly on capacity building. And that is both also an educational exercise, but really getting tools and resources out into these communities or making them available. And as part of that, right now, we're really putting a lot of emphasis on building an online toolkit that will just make tools that are relevant, readily accessible to these communities, whether it's community members or elected officials or organizations that work in or with these communities. And that, again, is very much a work in progress. And we're hoping to find lots of partners to help us really build that out and make it as effective for these communities as possible, and to do so quickly because we are getting a lot of demand. And again, we want to be responsive to that demand while working with pretty limited resources. I should note, Chris, that one of the big things we've been doing recently is we launched a webinar series this fall, and once we really started to see signs of amenity migration. We have a webinar series underway right now, which we've called broadly Boomtown. And it's all about amenity migration and the rise of the Zoom town in the rural West. And so that's underway. And we actually have an event on Thursday where local Sandpoint local Aaron Qualls, who's a planner with the city of Sandpoint, will be speaking among other folks from NAR communities from around the West about their experiences historically and currently with amenity migration and what they've learned along the way.
And as a matter of fact, I'm signed up to go to take in that webinar. Is the public invited to take in these webinars?
Absolutely. Great question. Yeah, all of our events are free and open to the public. They are, of course, being conducted virtually. We too are using Zoom. And we are also recording all of the events. So our events from the past, I actually did a webinar over a month ago on our research findings from 2018 about how growth and development were playing out in 2018 in our communities. The recording for that and our other session most recently on amenity migration trends are posted on our website, which you mentioned that URL earlier.
And I'll say you mentioned that Aaron Qualls, our Sandpoint planner, is going to be speaking Thursday. Well, Thursday is today as this is being aired. So folks, if you're listening to this and you want to hear today's webinar, which is going to be starting at 1 p.m., then go to the website. I assume they can just sign up at the website.
I think so. Yeah, I think they should be able to day of sign up. You definitely can in generally, but I think day of you can also sign up.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you want to hear it at 1 p.m. today, go to usu.edu/NAR, G-N-A-R. And if you click on, I think it's the NAR network link, you'll go to a little sign up form, send that in, and hopefully you'll be able to, I think it's an autoresponder that hits you back, and you can sign up for the webinar that's going to be this afternoon. And the title of that one is Community Perspectives on Amenity Migration. And along with Aaron Qualls speaking at that one, there's going to be folks from other communities that are being impacted, including the executive director of the Sanders County Community Development. Now, Sanders County is right next door to us in Montana. There's going to be a planner from Garfield County in Utah. There's going to be the mayor of Jackson, Wyoming, and the mayor of Moab. Those are two marquee communities in this whole phenomenon of gateway communities. So it should be a really interesting conversation. Again, that's at 1 p.m. today, November 12th. So if you're interested in that, get hie thee to the website and get signed up. Well, we're going to run out of time in a few minutes here, but I want to ask you, Danya, is there anything that you want to mention or bring out that we didn't get a chance to talk about?
Yeah, I appreciate that offer. As a collaboration professional, I really have taken to reminding everybody that we are both part of the problem and we're part of the solution. And I really want everybody listening, whether you're an elected official, you are a recent amenity migrant, your family has been in the Sandpoint region or wherever you're at for centuries, whoever you are, we have a responsibility to be part of the problem-solving enterprise. And as far as I know, pretty much anybody has a right to move anywhere they choose to move. Like, that is the way the world works. And I think that people who have been in a community for a long time also have the right to care about their community and worry about it changing in bad ways. And I think it's important to always keep in mind that we don't really mind change. We just want change for the better and not change for the worse. And while change in our community or being a force of change can kind of seem like a problem, I really just encourage everybody in these communities, again, whether you're a recent migrant or you've been there a long time, to be part of those conversations about how do we keep this community special? What is so special about this community? Why have we chosen to stay here? Why have we moved here? And what things can we do together to protect that and enhance that and make this a better place for people to live? Because one of the concerns we do see in these communities is that people want to sort of stick their head in the sand. They don't want growth. They don't want change. And while I can very much appreciate that feeling, and I can feel that myself about Sandpoint or even Salt Lake City, where I now live, that doesn't really help us solve the problem. And so again, whoever you are, hopefully you can step up, be part of that problem-solving enterprise, recognize the impact you have on others, and negotiate solutions that are going to work well for all parties.
Well said, Danya. And I want to say again that you are a Sandpoint homegirl, if you will, and a Sandpoint High School product. So it's great to see Sandpoint High kids getting out there and doing cool things out there in the world. So we appreciate that as the folks here that are invested in this community. Again, we've been speaking with Danya Ramore. She's the assistant professor at the University of Utah and founder of the Gateway and Natural Amenity Region Initiative, or the NAR Initiative. Danya, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
That's a wrap for our show today and our talk with Danya Ramore of the NAR Initiative. As one more reminder, if you're interested in this topic, you can get a ton more information and sign up for news releases at the www.usu.edu/GNAR website. This is Community Conversations on 88.5, and I'm Chris Bessler. Remember, if you missed part of this, you can hear the recorded podcast on our website at www.krfy.org. Meantime, be sure to tune in each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. for more community conversations. Thank you for listening today.